Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Okay, this is Chris Perotti, Vice President and Chief of Staff, the CEO of LogMeIn, which is a global technology company powering remote work for the last 20 years or so through remote access, remote support, and collaboration meeting software. Happy to be here today, John.
Awesome, Chris. Thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Actually, a user of LogMeIn, so this is an exciting conversation. Before we talk about your current role, current organization, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Yeah, it's been an interesting ride for me. I actually started my career at Forrester Research in customer support role back in 2003. So I like to tell people I'm proud of the fact that actually chief of staff is the only role I've held in my career that was held by someone else before me. So each role I've had since that first job has been a role that was, you know, the first one in it, the first person to create it. And it's taken me on some interesting roads, mostly through IT, business applications, business systems, sort of process design and business intelligence roles at Forrester. And then at LogMeIn, where I moved over to run their sales automation platforms and software at a time of really big growth around, you know, 2013 or so. Came in, we were about $250 million in revenue and stayed in that role until we made a number of series of acquisitions. And when I exited, we were about $1.1 billion in revenue. So a lot of growth, a lot of system changes, a lot of process changes. And it was a great ride to be, you know, to be driving that over that period. And then I've been in this role for about 2 years now, since the summer of 2019.
Wow, that's super exciting. And thanks for the background. Yeah. Seems like a very diverse, you know, experience, which I'm pretty sure a lot of that helps you in the current role. So tell us a little bit more about your current role as a chief of staff, what falls under your purview, and then I just have a couple of follow-through questions from that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think, you know, for most people listening, the chief of staff is it's a little bit of a black box role. Like when I talk to people outside of LogMeIn or other people in the position, and it's always great. That's one of my favorite things about the role is talking to other chiefs of staff at different companies, because it's so different. And it's a combination of what are your skills? What are your strengths? What does your leader need from you at that moment in time? What's the company going through? And what are the challenges there? So for me at LogMeIn, you know, my strengths as a sort of a systems thinker and a process person, I work for the CEO, who's a very people-centric leader. And we also were going through, obviously, the last year with the pandemic has been an interesting time for everybody. So we're going through that transition. We also happened to go private in the last year. So my role, what has come down to, has been there's the table stakes work of ensuring that the executive team is operating efficiently, right? So the basics, so you know, agendas for the staff meetings, holding people accountable, driving the monthly business reviews and facilitating those types of conversations. But in addition to that, over the last year, we've really dialed up communication. So I spend a lot of time making sure that our leadership group, which is about, you know, 150 or so senior directors and VPs around the world, are up to date and informed with what are the priorities of the company, what's happening, what do they need to know as leaders, as business leaders, as people managers around the world. So I send out a weekly leadership newsletter to help with that. And then with the pandemic, we've had to rally and connect our site leaders around the world in ways that we never had to before. So, you know, we had about 22 offices around the globe. We sent our employees home last March, and we had to have a very direct feedback loop with those people on the ground around the world throughout the year to make sure that we understood the unique challenges those employees were facing, what kind of decisions we should make around policy and benefits and communication, what do they need to know. So I had to spend a lot of time doing that, and sort of the CEO's point person for that work. And we also went through a reorg in the last year. We went private. So played a key role in the reorg and making sure that was rolled out correctly and people understood, you know, what's changing, what's not. And then obviously standing up the operating mechanics of the new org. So when do people meet? How do decisions get made? How does information flow around the org and making sure, you know, all the trains are running on time? What's interesting about the chief of staff role is that this is the role that if it doesn't fall on anyone else's plate, it lands on yours. So when you say things fall through the cracks, the chief of staff's at the bottom of the crack, typically catching all that stuff. So you never know what every day is going to bring or every week. You know, each morning I will jump on a stand-up call with the CEO and he may say, hey, I need you to go talk to this person about X, or I need you to go figure out an answer to Y, or whatever it might be. And that's the fun of the job. It's the challenge of the job as well.
Wow, that's super exciting. And if I was to summarize that, you are almost, you know, an extension of a CEO, and it's a high profile, high visibility type of role, which, you know, from Ivy Podcast perspective, the two audience segments that we have are executives themselves and also the early stage career professionals that are just entering the workforce. So a lot of the questions we always get is that particular interest in that chief of staff as a career path, for obvious reasons, because you get an opportunity to showcase your skills, work directly with the leadership, senior leadership of an organization. So tell us a little bit about that career path. What is, I realize every situation is pretty different from at least a high level typical path, how to get to that, what are the different skills that are required. Tell us a little bit more about that from a perspective of Chris giving advice to a 21-year-old self.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, for me to be successful in the chief of staff role, you need both a good head on your shoulders in terms of being organized and being process oriented. That's a huge part of the role. But the part that's probably maybe underappreciated is the EQ required and the influence, because, you know, you said extension of the CEO, and yes, that's true. But if you thought about the chief of staff as somebody who goes around and kind of, you know, knocks people over the head on behalf of the CEO, you're not going to be successful, because ultimately what you're trying to do is influence leaders around the company to row in the same direction, to get aligned, to have the right conversations. And that requires a lot of nuance. You do a lot of listening. You want to be trusted. You want people to be able to complain to you, to vent to you, but you also can't feel like you need to solve all their problems. So there's a throttling, right? You need to know when do you push and when do you pull back, and make sure that people are level. So I think EQ and understanding how to influence is really important skills. So if you're somebody who, you know, it feels like, hey, I can really rally people together against a common cause, if that's kind of that's your superpower, it's probably the right role for you. If you know how to, like, you know, set up structure and routine, and you're very consistent around setting expectations and getting things done, it's probably the right, you know, it's probably the right path for you. But I think that EQ, that influence, the listening parts are probably underappreciated. I think people have this image of chief of staff from watching, like, you know, political shows or military shows, where it's like, you know, they're just yelling at people and walking around and telling them to get this stuff, to get that stuff done. It's not a lot of that, to be honest, at least not in my experience, or at least not my approach. And it doesn't have to be.
You've talked a lot about EQ, and I think that's such a very strong point. And in a sense, it's also just overall leadership capabilities, because you're dealing with senior management, senior leadership of an organization, and it's your abilities to influence and lead such a high accomplished, very senior group of folks. I think that's a very unique skill set, and it's not easy, which leads me to the next point I want to talk to you about, is what are the different challenges that you deal with on your day-to-day responsibilities? Tell us a little bit more about that, so that those considering a career path in that can at least at a high level consider that.
Yeah, I mean, challenges, there's always challenges. I would say, I think in my personal experience, it's things you feel at some, on the bad day, it feels like you're stuck between, you know, someone moving 100 miles an hour in your leader, and maybe people who are not moving as fast or not understanding why they need to move that fast. So those days are frustrating, because you may feel like you're the blocker, and you aren't, but you need to understand how to translate those two speeds, understand it. The other piece of it that can be, you know, just purely candid is like, sometimes it feels like you're kind of just like a, you know, really high-end EA, right? There's days that there's a lot of scheduling, there's a lot of tactical stuff, there's, you know, you're updating files and SharePoint sites and things like that. And those days don't feel like you're having as big of an impact as the days that you can influence and see the value of your work coming out in that organization moving forward. I think the real struggle here is getting people to speak the same language. Like that is the biggest challenge. And it's going to slow you down, or it's going to get people stuck in their tracks if they can't actually, you know, align and speak on the same vernacular. So, you know, some of the things that people can do to help with that is having really clear priorities and objectives, like ratcheting up communication. Again, like communication seems to be the biggest cure for any challenges we've faced, whether that's written or getting people together and just hashing it out or a conversation. It seems really obvious and really basic, but that's really effective. And never more than it is today in this remote world. Like the, you know, communication, over communication is just communication today. So, you know, I think that's that. And the other thing that I think at the personal level or in the team is you're doing a lot of juggling, right? You have peers that you're working with or leaders that you're supporting who they're laser focused on marketing or customer care or building products or whatever it might be. And you have a little bit of all of that. So your depth of knowledge is never going to match anyone you're talking to about the field that they're, you know, the subject matter that they're on. And you have to be comfortable with that, right? So, you know, how do you know how to exert enough influence to move them in the right direction without overstepping and making it seem like, you know, you know more than they do? Because you probably don't, right? And you need to be comfortable with that.
Right. No, those are very interesting perspectives. And, you know, it's definitely not an easy task to tackle. And like you've mentioned, it's a lot of juggling. It's being able to adapt. And at the same time, it's a lot of priorities. Like you've mentioned, every day is a different day and you're dealing with executives and the entire organization. So tell us a little bit about that prioritization methodology, I guess, that you subscribe to that helps you balance so many different projects, which all of them seem like top urgent priority with everything being treated as a must-have.
Yeah.
What helps you kind of compartmentalize and keep things in order at the same time, not lose track of something that could be very important?
Yeah. I mean, the number one thing in the role is to stay really close to whoever you're supporting. Right. And I know it's not always the CEO. Sometimes it's the CMO or the chief sales officer, whatever, whoever leader you're supporting, try to be. If you're not talking to them every day, you're not talking to them enough. And I know that can be hard. They're very busy people. And sometimes, you know, I've spoken to other chiefs of staff who say, well, I only get 5 minutes with them all week. And the rest of the time I need to leverage it as perfectly as possible. I need to give them everything they need to know, every decision I have to make. And you don't usually get an opportunity to get anything back from them. So I would push hard and see if you can extend that a little bit daily. Since the pandemic started, I've had the good fortune of having a daily stand-up with the CEO and basically his head of comms, myself, and his EA meet every morning for 15 minutes. And it is an opportunity to just serve up real quick decisions, get feedback on things, plan out communication and messaging. That's been extremely helpful in terms of keeping us on track and organized. So that's at a really micro level with just the team. On a macro level for the company, you know, like everybody, we start with what are the board priorities? What are we trying to do this year? And then breaking them down into what are the objectives? What are the initiatives that line up to those priorities and how do we execute it? Who owns them? And then we put in place, you know, a monthly business review this year. We had done it quarterly in the past, but we want to move faster. We want to hold people accountable and we want to sort of grow and be more agile as a company. So every month we get together, we spend a day together talking about, you know, what did you say you were going to do last month? How did that go? What did you learn? What are the challenges you faced? What are you going to do next month? Where do you need help from other folks in the organization? And that's helped a lot because that sort of refreshes and reminds people what our priorities are as a company, as a leadership team. And then it's a lot easier to stay on track versus kind of, you know, saying you're going to do something and then everyone kind of goes in their own path, and you come together 3 months later and it's like, well, I decided I'm going to go chase this opportunity here, or I got hung up and I needed help, but I didn't ask anybody. So you want to make sure you provide those forums for people to have those conversations and ask those questions. So that's the core stuff on the executive team level. It's, you know, from a staff agenda, we have some standing topics that we tackle every week, right? Business performance reviews, what decisions are being made sort of within our kind of second level down leadership teams, that they have their own forums and what needs to get bubbled up and what needs to get pushed down. And then we tackle obviously strategic topics every week. And that's, you know, the blend of consistency and repeating with the strategic topics that come and go, and allowing for some space in that meeting. I think that's one of the lessons I've learned over the last year is, you know, I've gone from overscheduling the agenda where we have 15 topics and it's like, you know, my job becomes the time cop to make sure we get through everything, to really letting the topics fill the space to some degree and allowing for that conversation at that leadership level, so people can push on each other, they can brainstorm, they can debate a little bit more without being so regimented that we actually don't have any conversation. We have topic one end, topic two end, and that we're finding the right balance there, which we have today.
Yeah, those are great recommendations. And you've mentioned a couple of times as we're coming out of pandemic and organizations trying to figure out ways to structure the operations, you know, the hybrid models continue, the fully virtual and all, whatever the case may be. When we talk about the evolution of the role of the chief of staff, where you had the opportunity to deal with everybody face-to-face previously, and then everything shifted to completely, you know, remote environment. How has your role, if at all, you know, evolved in the past couple of years? Just speak from your personal perspective, and then I just want to talk to you a little bit about from the overall industry standpoint, where, you know, your perspectives on just the chief of staff role in general.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was in the role about 5 months when the pandemic hit. So, you know, in some ways I probably was just getting comfortable, getting my legs underneath me. So it's hard to say how has the role changed for me, because I feel like I've been a pandemic chief of staff, right? I don't have as much reference to what it was like before, because I was just figuring it out. I think it's changed. It's played to some of my personal strengths and some of what the CEO needed from me during the pandemic, which was this, you know, need to have somebody plugged into the pulse of the organization, right? How are people feeling? How are they working? And I think that empathy during this pandemic has been really important, and it's served us really well. And it's hopefully, you know, people are listening are saying, yeah, that's like being empathetic to whether, you know, people are dealing with their own health issues or their family's health issues or childcare or homeschooling, or, you know, their partner got laid off, whatever it might be. People have gone through a lot in the last year. So our ability as a company to stay in touch with our employees, what they're going through, and be empathetic has been really critical for us. And I feel like that's the part that I've played along with our head of HR over the last year, to say we put in pulse surveys. You know, we're driving that, we're getting feedback, we're making decisions, we're doing things like giving the company a day off once a month for a self-care day to help them sort of cope with whether it's meeting fatigue or they're just working really hard or they just have a lot going on. And those types of things have gone a long way. And now in terms of the role, I actually found this is maybe counter to what people think. Like the face-to-face stuff in the past, and I think, you know, you probably experienced this, John, like, you know, if you were if you worked in a global company, not everybody you had meetings with were in the building anyway, right? They're not in the room. So you had this, I got five people in the room, I have three people on the TV, and they're never really as engaged as the people in the room. Meeting ends, that you hang up on them and you stand up, and then like the actual meeting happens, right? And real decisions get made as people walk out of the room, and then no one tells the people that were on the phone, and it's, you know, everyone knows the story. So I feel like when the pandemic started, it completely leveled the playing field. So everybody, no matter where you are, we're all remote, we're all on the screen together, and there is no meeting after the meeting. I think that's helped us quite a bit. So when we go back to the office, you know, in depending on where we are in the world, potentially in a few weeks or a few months, We really want to maintain that as best we can. I think we believe that the hybrid working is going to introduce, you know, a much larger challenge than remote working did. And so we're putting rules in place like, you know, the exec team meeting, that's not the day for an exec to go into the office. That's a day for them to work from home because our executive team is spread around the globe. And we want to maintain that, you know, equity of experience and conversation by keeping everybody in their home office on those days.
No, that's very, yeah, very interesting. And thanks for sharing that. Can definitely relate to a lot of that from, you know, shifting from physical locations to remote environments, which brings me to the next point I want to talk to you about is from a talent acquisition perspective, with just, you know, you've been exposed to at the executive leadership level, I would imagine that surrounding yourself with, you know, just the best candidate and the best teams is at the top of the mind for you, for your CEO and everybody else at the leadership level, whether you're actively recruiting or not. And tell us a little bit more about that, kind of the strategies that really help you, you know, attract the top talent. And then the second point I want to address is with such a war for talent out there, the retention becomes another layer of importance for a lot of organizations. How do you guys deal with that? How do you address, make sure that the top performance are retained and you build that environment?
Yeah. So I'll start with sort of the talent strategy and how it's evolved over the last couple of years. And I think the, you know, the remote working and flex working trend had started before, right? We were already hearing from our employees, you know, in 2018 and 2019 around, they want flexibility. They want, you know, at the time, I'd be able to want to work from home a day or two a week. As obviously we've gone through the pandemic and we've pulled our employees, what they're telling us is 80% of them don't want to be in the office 5 days a week. So we are moving to a completely, you know, flexibility first type of model, whether that's where you work in the office or at home or when you work, right? So I think one of the next dimensions that people need to get their heads around is when we think about a day in the office, it's not 9 to 5. It could be 2 to 4, right? I come in for one meeting and I go home. So there's the flexibility around where, but also when. So we're leaning into that with the but that also opens up a whole opportunity for talent attraction, right? So in the past, we were limited to say, we have our locations, our site locations around the world, and we need the best person to do this particular job who's close enough where they can get into that office 3 days a week or 5 days a week, whatever it might be. Just naturally limiting our options there, right? So in this new model, we can now look, you know, anywhere in the world where we are legally, you know, we can legally employ somebody. And just in the last, you know, year, we've hired a new head of engineering in Pittsburgh, which we, to be quite honest, we never even looked at someone who lived full-time in Pittsburgh, you know, a year ago. And she's fantastic. We're really excited to have her. We never would have found her if we hadn't made that switch. We have a leader of diversity and inclusion who's in Idaho. Like, again, never probably wouldn't have entertained that. We have a CISO we just hired in Texas. And so we are finding talent in places where we hadn't before. We have a model for them to be successful. And it's leveling the playing field across our company as this sort of, you know, HQ centricity kind of, you know, vibe that people have. All the decision makers are in one building. Well, that's just not the case anymore. So it's helped with that. You asked the question about retaining talent, and this is twofold, right? So we're on the positive side, we're fishing in ponds that we couldn't fish in before geographically for talent, which is great for us. But it also means there's certain parts of the world where we were the only game in town, and now we have other tech companies and other employers coming in and offering the same benefits. Well, you can work from home wherever you might be for a California company or whatever it might be. So I think for us, retention is about really doubling down on the vision and mission of the company and making sure people feel like there is a purpose to being here, right? There's a higher calling. That there is pride in the work they're doing, and the work is interesting and it's moving the needle. And obviously that, you know, the benefits and pay, et cetera, is commensurate. But that feels like chasing your tail a little bit, right? If you don't get the other things right, if you don't get, hey, is the work I'm doing rewarding? Do I like the people I work with? Do I have the right work-life balance? You know, the pay only goes so far. And I think we all know people who get paid a lot of money who are completely burnt out and hate their jobs. So, you know, it's, you know, everybody has their priorities, but I think for us, it's really about making sure that people are clear on the mission, enjoy the work they're doing, like the people they work with, and creating that really positive work environment for them.
Right. And as I, you know, I talk to a lot of executives at different company sizes, and it's been an interesting dynamic from the talent attraction perspective that going into pandemic, a lot of companies thought that, you know, yeah, we're shifting fully remote. Now I'm going to get access to all kinds of talents, you know, on a global scale. But at the same time, competition 10x as well, because the companies that are much bigger or much better packages also targeting the same talents out there. So it's been interesting to observe how companies really come up with very creative ways to attract the top talent, which speaks to a lot of the things that you've talked about. Aside from maybe chief of staff role or anything that we've talked about, tell us a little bit more about what are the different trends and ideas that really excite you these days. What are you researching? What's in Chris's The Next Big Thing book?
Yeah, I mean, it is the future of work, right? That has been top of mind for me for, you know, over a year now. How do we make this transition? In our case, from a stereotypical software office-based culture with, you know, ping pong tables and basketball courts and baristas and all that, where you're creating an environment to pull people into the office, to one in which, you know, we're offering flexibility for folks without losing some of the cultural elements, right, and the touchstones that are there. So that's, I spent just a lot of time on that work. And how do we go ahead and rethink our workflows as a company? How do you get your job done? How do you get information? And where do you go for help? How do you get your equipment? How do you onboard in a digital and remote first methodology, right? So it requires scrutiny across the board. And I've had, you know, good fortune of working with some really talented people outside of LogMeIn as thought partners on this. And whether there are other companies going through this or just folks who do this for their careers. And we've taken an approach, a phased approach, I'd say. You know, we declared our intentions early and said, we're going all in. And I give credit to our CEO, Bill Wagner. Like, I think it was like 2 weeks after we shut the offices down. He said, we're not going back. Like, it's not back. Whenever this is, it's not going to be back. We're going forward. You got to go figure out what forward looks like. And that's what we've been doing as a team. So, you know, we're working through how do we handle, you know, on-demand office space for folks who might need to get together with their colleagues, or folks who are living with their roommates and they need just a quiet place to get work done every once in a while. How should we rethink our benefits for our employees in the future? How do we measure? How do we balance the, you know, the perception of, you know, additional utility costs for our workers at home and the savings from commuting, right? The time and expense savings. How do we balance out our in-office amenities to make sure that those home workers don't feel disadvantaged by working from home, right? How do we change our employee engagement program? So, for example, in the past, we had each office had, you know, what we called the hub, but they're really almost like fund committees, for lack of a better phrase, who were, you know, volunteer employees whose job it was to plan engagement activities, right? So for example, I used to host trivia night in our Boston office once a quarter. And, you know, everyone would come in, we do a trivia night, we serve people pizza, we have a great time, they go home. Well, that doesn't really work if only, you know, 10% of your employees are in the office on any given day. And you don't want to have a trivia night and make everyone feel like they missed out. So we have to rethink what that looks like. And it has to be less office-based, but more employee-based. So now that we have pockets of employees that have relocated or we've hired remotely around the country, you know, we can now, we've changed our model. So now we can create these sort of regional hubs of employees, regardless of whether or not there's an office, right? Which is just a mindset shift. So how do we do that? And then how do we structure those groups of employees to create a log me in community wherever it is, Austin, Texas, Chicago. Like I'm actually in Northern Vermont, John. I moved here about a year ago. So, you know, my dream is maybe there's 15 log me inners up here in a couple of years, and I'm hosting a trivia night at a local pub up here to drive the same level of community engagement. So this future of work, these trends, how does it work? I mean, and I even had someone, a friend of mine, come up and visit for the long weekend, and him and his fiance were like, well, can we just work from your house? Right. I'm like, okay. And I had one day here where I was working, my wife was working, and my two friends were all working. And I felt like I was running a WeWork out of my house, but at the same time, I'm like, this is kind of the future. It's like, they can travel. Can I work from your house? So we think about working spaces. I mean, I feel like that line between our homes and our offices it's just getting blurrier and blurrier. And that really, I know it really excites me, because I think about what is that going to mean for our families and our communities and the environment, right, over time. And then to extend it even further, what does that mean for, you mentioned competitive pay, but what does that mean for competitive pay down the road? Like, I think ultimately the salaries for jobs will be based on the value of the work that role plays, not necessarily where that person's located, in a way that we haven't seen in the past. So I'm really excited about that. Obviously, like, I could probably talk about that for days, but that's where a lot of my time and thought is going right now.
No, absolutely. I think it's one of the hottest trends, especially lately, the whole concept of future of work with contingent workforce just on the rise, gig worker, freelancer community, you know, and almost take that a little bit further. Some of the trends I've really been excited about, kind of the smart cities or the cloud cities, where you have the concentration of, you know, certain professionals in a particular skill set working, collaborating together. I think a lot of that is, we're going to see a lot more opportunities come about from that perspective. I see a lot of books behind you on your shelf. I want to talk a little bit about books, but before I do that, aside from books, what's your content diet is looking like these days? What are your sources for learning, self-actualization with so much information being thrown at us? How are you selecting what you let your mind be exposed to?
Yeah, good question. It is hard, right? I think everyone has to be pretty conscious about what are they reading, what are they consuming, and how biased is it, right? So for me, I am an NPR guy in the morning. So, you know, I listen to NPR while I'm getting ready for work. I use a lot of the, you know, newsfeed aggregators and things like The Atlantic and Vice and some other tech news feeds. But I probably spend less time, I guess I read a lot of future of work articles from different sources. Different podcasts, the Ivy podcast. I'll give you a plug there, John. So some of that stuff, while I exercise, while I run, I do like listen to podcasts. Although I feel like it's really important to also separate yourself during those times from some of the work content, right? You got to balance yourself out. So I like to read sort of two books at a time. I like to have whether it's a professional growth book or, you know, as well as a, you know, a pleasure reading book, and sort of, I kind of toggle back and forth depending on how I feel that day or that night. You know, right now I'm just wrapping up the Empire of Pain book from, you know, Patrick Radden Keefe about the OxyContin and the Sackler family. So that's actually a fantastic book, and it's interesting about the intersection of pharmaceuticals and marketing that led to the rise of the Purdue family. So that's interesting. I think, you know, you had asked me ahead of this, like, what's a book I'd recommend? I think the most impactful book that I've read in the last 2 years when it comes to professional, and I'll give it a plug, is Brave New Work by Aaron Dignan. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. And he does, it's a very readable book. It moves really fast, very approachable, but it's about reinventing the way we work. And I read this book before the pandemic. I think it's even more important now, because in a world where people need to have conscious decisions about the working agreements they make, what are the processes we have? Why are we meeting? How should we work? And creating that sense of freedom to try, right? Freedom to take chances and take risks so that you can get some innovation out of it. And, you know, there's, you people hear the, the concept of one-way doors or two-way door decisions. Aaron has a concept of above and below the waterline, right? So screw something up, it's above the waterline, the boat doesn't sink. Screw something up below the waterline, like your boat's sinking. So, you know, how do you help your team and your employees understand where that waterline is so that they can move fast and be empowered to drive decisions? Just fantastic read. I highly recommend it.
Well, I love these recommendations. And for our listeners, as always, we'll make those titles available in the show notes. Chris, I can't thank you enough for your time today. I personally learned quite a bit. Very insightful conversation. Definitely going to stay in touch with you. What I love doing with a lot of guests is do a follow-up episode in about a year to see how much of change transpired. We would revisit the conversation we had a year ago and see if a lot of the things that we talked about still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to that with you.
Yeah, me too. And I can guarantee you things will be different.
That's awesome, man. Much appreciate your time and we'll be in touch soon.
Thanks, John.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.